Barbara, thanks for bringing, it's a loom, right? Okay, I was dreading saying that out loud and being wrong. Yeah, thanks for bringing our loom, for putting in all that time to set it up, and to have an opportunity for our kids to lead us. We know our children are often leading us, and it's always so much fun to get to watch them with the excitement and the joy that they get to bring and do bring to the hands-on parts of our faith. They bring so much wonder, and I hope that we can follow that lead in this season of being woven together. What an opportunity to bring our wonder to what God is weaving and creating with us. Let's hear some good news this morning. We'll hear from the gospel according to Luke chapter 18, verses 9 through 14. When my New Testament professor A.J. Levine talks about the parable of the Pharisee and the tax collector, she likes to describe it as the ancient version of the group project. If you've been in school at any point, or maybe even in your job now, you've probably had an assignment where you had to work with a group of people, a group of other people, to complete a task. As A.J. tells it, this assignment usually ends up putting together a diverse collection of people. There's the smart one, who always comes prepared and organized, and we like the smart one because the project is nearly finished before we even have our first meeting. There's the one who's good at art, who's going to take the group's ideas and bring them to life in creative and beautiful ways. There's the one who provides the provisions, the coffee, the donuts, the candy, the bourbon, whatever you need to help you get through working together in a group. And then there's that one who literally brings nothing to the table. I have been in that group project before, and I'll let y'all guess after which character I am. And we know how the story goes. Three in the group do their fair share, and the fourth doesn't do much at all, and so the other three have to cover for them. So not only do they do their fair share, they do more than what is expected. If you're like me, you probably received a good grade on the project, but you couldn't help feeling a little bitter at that other person. Sometimes we know who the fourth person is going to be even before we get started on the work. I remember a group project in seminary where we got our group assignments and then three of us looked at each other, disappointed with that same look of expectation of what we were going to get out of our last team member. Nothing. And the outcome was still the same. We all received a good grade and we stewed in our bitterness about how we were better than the other in our group, who in our narrow sense didn't contribute what we did. And maybe we too said, "Thanks God, for I am not like that person." In one of the commentaries I read this week, I was reminded that parables are like fishing lures. That was a new comparison. I hadn't heard that one before, and I liked it. Parables are like fishing lures. With parables, there are these attractive threads that come out. Maybe a shiny idea that's easy to follow, so we grab onto it. And then we end up getting caught by the wrong thing. We miss the point altogether, or worse yet, somebody gets hurt. In today's parable, there is an easy interpretation available to us. Two people are praying at the temple. On the surface, one is the villain, and the other is the hero. The sinner is the saint. The saint turns out to be satanic. Cool. We can handle that. Be like one, dismiss the other, and we're done here. As much as I wanted to take that bait this week, I can hear AJ yelling at me now, if you read a parable and are comfortable with the message, you're reading it wrong. Luke tells us Jesus' audience right from the start, people who thought they were righteous and regarded others with contempt. In other words, Jesus is talking to some folks that are full of themselves and looking down on others. And so Jesus, never one to miss a teaching opportunity, tells them a parable that includes a Pharisee and a tax collector. By the 18th chapter of Luke's gospel, we have heard numerous stories of Pharisees and tax collectors. The Pharisees tended to be unlikable. The tax collectors ended up being redeemed and beloved. So by this point, we're already bringing our assumptions about how this story is going to turn out. The Pharisee will be humbled, the tax collector will be exalted, and that is kind of what happens, right? But we're going to mess with that a little bit this morning. So y'all come along for the ride. It is worth remembering that despite how the gospel writers portray them, the Pharisees would have been respected teachers in their community. And this Pharisee, by all accounts, is walking the walk. He has not only done what is commanded of him, he has gone above and beyond what is expected. The Pharisee is the smart one, the artsy one, and brings the snacks. The tax collector, on the other hand, well, he's gotten rich at the expense of others. He has betrayed his people, working as an agent for Rome. He represents empire and oppression to Jesus' Jewish audience. He's the subject of our disappointed glances, the one that we really don't want in our group. And so the parable shows us two juxtaposing characters, the Pharisee standing by himself, praying in celebration of the good that he had done, albeit a little judgmental of others, and the tax collector standing far off, beating his breast, admitting to his sin and his need for mercy. Both folks are standing by themselves, seemingly a little disconnected from each other, and both, we are told, are seeking justification from God. Or, as Will Willimon would say, both are seeking to be brought closer to God. And then the line on which the message of this parable hangs, "I tell you, this man, the tax collector, went down to his home justified rather than the other." Luke reiterates a truth that I know that we can claim. God draws close to us, and as sinners, as broken people. And it is the tax collector, not the Pharisee, Luke tells us, that God justifies. Yet I have a little bit of a problem with the fact that we're led to believe that the tax collector is justified rather than the Pharisee. That just doesn't sound like the God of grace that I know and hold so close. As AJ points out, biblical scholars generally presume that the Greek preposition, para, used to refer to the Pharisee means rather than. However, I think that might miss the point. This prefix para shows up in other places as well. We know the word paradox. You may have heard the word parable. You've probably heard the word paraclete, which is that fancy word for spirit, which Jesus says comes alongside us, draws next to us as advocate. So maybe instead of its primary connotation being one of antagonism, para can also be interpreted as next to, alongside. I tell you, this man went down to his home justified alongside the other. How might that change how we read this parable, and what new challenges come from it? Instead of one being justified rather than the other, what if Jesus tells us that one was justified alongside the other? It is an easy reading to dismiss one at the expense of another, to claim that the Pharisee is judgmental and full of himself, and so we should be more like the tax collector, claiming our sin and praying for mercy. Or we can claim that the tax collector is insincere in his prayer, since we never actually see a change in his behavior. So I'll be like the Pharisee, and I'll continue to live righteously, and I might brag a little bit about it. As the late Disciples preacher Fred Craddock said of the Pharisee and the tax collector, neither of the characters is hero or villain. Both are about half right and half wrong. After the van accident in August, all I really wanted to do was hide out. My heart is still a little broken seeing those folks that I love so much hurt and afraid. And you know that feeling of feeling like there is nothing that you can contribute to make any of that better. But I can feel those hugs. I'm grateful for those phone calls and those notes, the box of cookies on my desk and the coffee at my doorstep. And I can still hear those kids checking on and showing up for each other. And I wonder where they learned to be generous in their care for others. I feel confident when I say I am not the only one in this room with firsthand experience of the ways this church shows up for each other. Y'all love and care in abundance. And if you've ever been on the receiving end of that, you've surely wondered how could you ever reciprocate that? And then we know that isn't our expectation. What this community knows in its bones, in its DNA, is what is at the heart of this parable. That we can afford to be generous and gracious with one another, that we have the capacity to care for one another, and that we grow closer to God alongside each other. I'm not thinking, God, that I'm not like the other. I am thinking, God, that we have each other. There will be times when you will be the one who goes above and beyond, when you're the one who brings that perfect dish to the potluck. And there will be times, though we don't want to admit it, that you will be the one who has let everything slip and won't have anything to bring at all. Yet we can be confident that we can show up anyways, trusting in each other, knowing that someone is going to be there to pick us up, someone has brought extra, and God says there is always going to be enough anyways. And God says you are always enough. God has room for the tax collector and the Pharisee, and so do we. In this season, we get to step back and we get to see how God is restlessly weaving us together. We get to celebrate each individual thread and how it contributes to the beautifully messy picture God is creating. Living in community together is a group project. God has put us all here together and then gave us that real tricky assignment of trying to figure out how to love the world more fully. We all have something to contribute, whether we feel like the smart one, the artsy one, the snack person, or the one who feels like they have nothing. One is not closer to God at the expense of the rest. We grow closer to God alongside of each other and because of each other. When we really look at what God is weaving, we will see all of us are sharing gifts, even when we don't feel like we are. We know that we can be generous in our embrace of one another, and y'all, we can celebrate that we keep showing up and that God is still weaving. This is more than a gift. It is hope-sustaining. It is life-giving. It is good news. Amen.